This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry on a State of the Union Wednesday after the speech on Tuesday evening. Thanks so much for listening.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, fellow Americans.
The voice there of the confident, reelected President of the United States making his case for the next 4 years.
51 years ago, John F. Kennedy declared to this chamber that the Constitution makes us not rivals for power, but partners for progress. It is my task, he said, to report the State of the Union. To improve it is the task of us all.
Improvement was the theme last night, and on a variety of themes and with a gritty, urgent tone, the president tried to mobilize consensus and leap over some differences. Here's one of the attempted leaps. The budget process, with its fiscal cliffs and sequestration deadlines, is broken, he said. We can only fix it together.
The greatest nation on earth cannot keep conducting its business by drifting from one manufactured crisis to the next. We can't do it. Let's agree. Let's agree right here, right now, to keep the people's government open and pay our bills on time and always uphold the full faith and credit of the United States of America.
The economy was the focus, as is often the case in State of the Union speeches, but this was a reframing of the economic argument, certainly a reframing from earlier treatments by this president. Out of the worst of the financial crisis, away from having to react to its times and its urgency, time now to attack the slow growth in the economy with programs on fixing infrastructure, raising the federal minimum wage, something he called for, targeting the struggling middle class who helped elect this president for a second term.
It is our generation's task, then, to reignite the true engine of America's economic growth, a rising, thriving middle class.
Among the pro-growth policies he outlined was an emphasis on innovation in local communities, particularly manufacturing. He profiled a manufacturing success story in Youngstown, Ohio, and then said he would repeat that success in other communities.
So tonight, I'm announcing the launch of three more of these manufacturing hubs, where businesses will partner with the Department of Defense and Energy to turn regions left behind by globalization into global centers of high-tech jobs. And I ask this Congress to help create a network of 15 of these hubs and guarantee that the next revolution in manufacturing is made right here in America. We can get that done.
A manufacturing innovation hub may be coming to a community near you. There was boldness in the president's focus on immigration reform. Bring me a bill and I'll sign it, he said. There was boldness in how the president pledged to reform Medicare that would require the richest recipients to make sacrifices and change eligibility to reduce costs while maintaining a secure level of benefits, he said, all to save billions of dollars. The detailed math on that will come later. And the president was bold on climate change, an issue dropped during his first term and barely mentioned during the election campaign.
The 12 hottest years on record have all come in the last 15. Heat waves, droughts, wildfires, floods, all are now more frequent and more intense. We can choose to believe that Superstorm Sandy and the most severe drought in decades and the worst wildfires some states have ever seen were all just a freak coincidence. Or we can choose to believe in the overwhelming judgment of science and act before it's too late.
The president proudly, and you could hear the pride in his voice, proudly proclaimed the end game in the long war in Afghanistan.
This spring, our forces will move into a support role while Afghan security forces take the lead. Tonight, I can announce that over the next year, another 34,000 American troops will come home from Afghanistan. This drawdown will continue, and by the end of next year, our war in Afghanistan will be over.
The war over in Afghanistan. The most surprising initiative from this president came on the question of voting rights. The Voting Rights Act is again before the U.S. Supreme Court, and the president believes the whole system of voting in America needs a serious upgrade.
Tonight, I'm announcing a nonpartisan commission to improve the voting experience in America, and it definitely needs improvement. I'm asking two longtime experts in the field who, by the way, recently served as the top attorneys for my campaign and for Governor Romney's campaign, to lead it. We can fix this, and we will. The American people demand it, and so does our democracy.
Clearly, though, the most emotional moment in his address last night, this shortest State of the Union of his presidency, came when he referred to the coming fight over changing gun laws, a fight that he wants to be honest and open. He referred to relatives in the audience of a young girl in Chicago who died from gun violence since the inauguration speech. In the end, the president said there should be a vote on some plan of changes, if only for all the victims.
Gabby Giffords deserves a vote. The families of Newtown deserve a vote. The families of Aurora deserve a vote. The families of Oak Creek and Tucson and Blacksburg and the countless other communities ripped open by gun violence, they deserve a simple vote. They deserve a simple vote.
A simple vote? Well, we will see how simple. Some selections there from the State of the Union address last night from President Barack Obama. Joining us now, Todd Zwillich, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, John.
Are they going to get a vote
on gun control? They're going to get they're going to get some votes. And the interesting thing about the call for a vote on these gun measures that the president called for to great sort of effect on television, I think, and also for a vote on federal minimum wage increase, is you got to remember, calling for the vote doesn't necessarily mean you win, but it does mean you get the issue, because the vote means everybody in Congress get on record. So I want to win on this issue, but even if I don't, I want you to tell your constituents and the rest of the country where you stand. And if you're on the wrong side of that issue and I'm on the right side of it, it'll help us in the election.
What did you make of this speech in the mix of policy, in the mix of sort of emotional warnings, in the mix of sort of goodies announced for people politically one side or the other?
Absolutely progressive, a progressive speech, a liberal speech, if you want to use that word, sort of the grittier end of what we saw beginning in the inaugural speech just a couple of weeks ago. You know that the president's for climate change legislation. You know the president's for gun control legislation. But the president took to task Republicans in Congress for some of the more mundane things, that I'm not backing down on my insistence that we're not going to keep cutting federal spending or programs that middle-class people rely on while we protect tax provisions and tax subsidies and loopholes for the wealthiest. He's telling Congress in front of the country that issue is going to continue. I won on it once, and I can win on it again. An increase in the federal minimum wage to $9. I don't think a lot of people in the audience saw that one coming, John. Now, that's going to be a big, heavy lift to get congressional Republicans to agree to a $1.75 increase in the federal minimum wage at a time when the economy is still struggling. You can see the argument coming that small businesses with 12 employees or 17 employees or even 45 employees are going to have a really hard time affording an increase in the federal minimum wage. Usually, successful increases in the minimum wage comes at a time when we're economically flush, when you can form a consensus and make the argument that everybody's doing pretty well, so let's let some of the success, I'm sorry to say, trickle down to the people making minimum wage. But the president tried to make a compelling argument. Nobody working full time should live in poverty. I think that's an opening gambit, maybe an increase in the federal minimum wage finally in the next couple of years. I would be surprised if you saw one this year.
Is this a strategy document, in a sense, with all these calls for let's have a vote? Here's something we can do. Send me a bill and I'll sign it. Is he basically setting up a template of, if nothing happens on these programs, it's really basically a document for the off-year election in 2 years and really 2016, that the Republicans weren't able to do anything on immigration, weren't able to do anything on gun control, weren't able to do anything on the minimum wage. Is that what they're setting up for, or is he programmatic here? Does he really want these programs?
Well, I mean, who knows what the president really wants? There's plenty of indication that he really does want a deal on immigration. And there's plenty of indication that there may be consensus in Congress to actually get a broad-based deal. Republicans want to vote on that. I've had Republicans tell me that. You've seen them elsewhere saying that. They feel that the immigration issue and their lack of support among Latino voters is an existential problem. They want to pass something, and they actually want the president to help them do it. If he wants the policy and not the issue, then there may be an excuse to lock arms and do it. But more broadly than that, John, I think what you saw thematically was actually a reprise of a strategy that the White House has used to pretty good effect over the last 2 years, to leverage the president's popularity, to leverage the president's brand as a mainstream left-of-center progressive, where he positions his issues right in the middle of American public opinion and then basically casts off Republicans as out of the mainstream. Incidentally, what's interesting is the Democrats suffered from this on national security and on taxes for many, many decades. And they seem to have flipped the script, or at least Barack Obama has flipped the script. So he's saying, look, the American people don't think you give considerations to the rich while hitting the middle class on taxes and on fiscal issues. They don't think that you try to kick out, you know, 12 right. million undocumented immigrants, or that you let assault weapons roam the countryside. It doesn't mean that he wins on these issues, but he's trying to leverage Republicans who are not popular right now, Congress, which right. is very unpopular right now, away from the mainstream of voters.
All right, 30 seconds. What were the optics in the hall, the mood, the sense? And did Marco Rubio win any points?
John, I was 5 feet away from Gabby Giffords and Captain Mark Kelly during that speech. They sat them right up next to the radio television correspondents where I was. Gabby Giffords and Mark Kelly stood at the very top of the section on gun control. And I don't know exactly how it played on television, because it's always different on TV when you're in the room. But it was a highly emotional moment as you scan the room and see mothers holding up pictures of slain children. That was to great effect. Marco Rubio, a rebranding of the Republican image. A lot of the policies were the same, but he is a new kind of Republican. He's younger. He's Latino. He did it partly in Spanish. And they are hoping to reset the Republican image in front of the public, away from the Mitt Romney era, which didn't do them any good, and try to go forward here in the next 2 years. Immigration, incidentally, is a huge part of that for them.
Do they have anybody besides Marco Rubio to do that? They've got a couple of other characters in there. You've got the new senator from Texas. You've got a bunch of individuals who they will be rolling out over the next year or so.
They certainly have. They have people all over the right still, like Ted Cruz, the new senator from Texas. They have some people they want to mainstream, and they still have Paul Ryan. Don't forget about Paul Ryan. We'll be on your television soon when the budget fights that are looming behind us still come right back into the fore, John.
I could not tell if John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, who's always there in the shot during the State of the Union address, because it is an address before the joint session of Congress. You always know that Joe Biden's having fun. But John Boehner, what did you think?
Well, you know, there's not a lot of indication that John Boehner actually enjoys the ritual part of this job, you know, sitting there stone faced. He has had a difficult relationship with Barack Obama lately. A lot of the big negotiations, remember, have kicked away from Boehner and Obama, and they've gone to what we call the adults in the room lately, Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell says he's not interested in any more 11th hour negotiations. Incidentally, John Boehner says, I'm not getting into any more of these big negotiations with Barack Obama either. Harry Reid, it's on you. Senate, take some risks. Send me a bill. That's John Boehner's attitude.
All right. Todd Zulick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks so much. Your comments on the State of the Union address at 877-8MY-TAKE, or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. And because it's Valentine's Day week, your 6-word memoirs of love and lost later in the program. Keep them coming.